Hi, we're Josh
and Arielle Wamsley,
owners of Green Valley Tree LLC, based in North Windham.
We're proud to sponsor Connecticut East this week and to serve the communities of Windham and New London counties with our tree removal and plant healthcare services.
Visit our website at greenvalleytreeworks.com for a full list of our services or give us a call on 860-234-4041. We look forward to hearing from you.
Crumbling concrete home foundations. We find out the latest from the captive insurance company dealing with this crisis. And we talk with UConn about the funding they've received to research into the crumbling foundation problem. Plus a look at other stories making the headlines from around the region. This is Connecticut East This Week. Hello, I'm Brian Scott-Smith. If you're a homeowner in northeastern Connecticut, you might own a home with a crumbling concrete foundation. It's a big problem for you and the state as well, which is why they set up a special insurance company a few years ago to help out those who are affected. So where are we now with the money and resources to solve this crisis? I caught up with Michael McGlaris, superintendent of the Connecticut Foundation Solutions Indemnity Company, to find out more. Michael, thanks for joining us on Connecticut East This Week.
Well, hello, Brian. It's nice to be with you.
Explain to us, if you would, who is the Connecticut Foundation Solutions Indemnity Company?
Excellent question. Let us tell you what we are. We are not a conventional insurance company, Brian, in the classic sense. You and I know what that is, right? You give a premium to an insurance company. They give you a policy. They wait to see if you're going to hand them a claim or not. That's been the traditional modus operandi of insurance companies for centuries. Well, CIFSIC, as we call it, is not that kind of company. We don't collect a premium. We don't issue an insurance policy. We are, in fact, solely set up for the purpose of paying valid construction remediation claims. When you file with us, when you present a claim that's valid to us, our goal is to accept that claim if it falls within our parameters and pay it. So in that regard, we're a little bit like an insurance company, but not an awful lot like an insurance company.
The important thing to say, of course, is you are there for the people who may possibly have a crumbling foundation issue home here in Connecticut. And the other thing, I suppose, to make clear as well is even if you have like homeowners insurance, my understanding is that the Connecticut Supreme Court said that traditional insurers, your home insurers, will not cover you for this. So this is effectively what you were sort of like created for.
It is indeed. We were created in 2017 by statute prior to the Supreme Court's decision, of course, as you may know. But we're here because in every sense, Brian, we are a very consumer-focused, consumer-oriented insurance company, organized under state law as a what we call a captive insurance company, where funding is dictated by statute to us. We operate independently as an independent company. But let's be clear, we're the only source of anyone paying these claims right now.
So tell us, what's the latest on this? Because this, obviously, the situation with these crumbling foundations has been going on for a number of years now. As we said, your organization, I should say, since 2017, has been set up to assist potential claimees here in Connecticut. So where are we with the amount of claims at the beginning of 2021?
Well, let's put it in a framework for you because it's important to talk about timeline. Even though we were organized or we were created by statute in 17, we really got off the ground on January 10, 2019. And so for all intents and purposes, since you and I are talking in the month of January of 21, we've been in business taking claimants' applications and remediating foundations. We've been in business since January 10. It's really been 2 years, really. In that 2 years' time, we have, as of this morning, remediated 290 foundations. There are 290 families back in their homes with a safe and secure foundation where my staff has adjusted that claim, collected an application, collected at least 8 points of evidence with visual examination evidence, upwards of 200 pages per claim. And we have successfully put 290 families back in their homes. On top of that, we're also proud to say that we have reimbursed homeowners who years ago used their own resources. They've dug into their, you know, their retirement accounts in some cases and paid for their own foundation because their claims were denied by the commercial insurance industry. We've reimbursed 88 of those people to the tune of almost $8 million. So We'd like to think that we have had reasonable success. We'd like to think that we've fulfilled our mandate and our charter. There's much more to do. We've made some progress.
I'm going to make this absolutely clear. The cost of these foundation repairs is extensive. I mean, these are not cheap things. And has their home investigated and they are able to make a claim and everything points in the right direction to a valid claim, this is an extensive and costly thing to do, isn't it?
Let's put it in some kind of framework for your listeners, too, because that's important. When the company was established and its underwriting rules were published on its website, and I addressed many public hearings and meetings on this subject, I announced that we had established a cap of $175,000 in remediation expense. I'm talking very specifically about the cap on funds that we give, Brian, for you to fix your foundation that we pay for. We took some heat on that subject. A lot of folks in social media indicated that that was an inadequate number, that no foundations would be fixed as a result. The written record is clear on that. Well, that's not been the case. In fact, as of this morning, our average remediation cost is actually $154,135, well below our cap. What's happened? Well, a couple of things. The cap is held. It's been a valid cap. But secondly, old-fashioned American capitalist competition has happened. 27 approved contractors have sharpened their pencil. They've bid on these projects. And we've been able, as a result, to stretch our dollars more than we even expected. There'll be a certain point, Brian, where we can't bring the cost much below, I think, $149,000 to $150,000, because these are complex remediation projects to imagine. But we've managed to lower the cost of what it takes to get you back in a safe, a secure foundation through our competitive efforts, and we're pretty proud of that.
Now, again, for the sake of the listeners, if they've not heard of this, and it'll be surprising if they've not heard about the crumblings like foundation story here in Connecticut, but it seems to affect more homes, not exclusively, but more homes in sort of the Tolland County area. Although, as we said, there are other homes, certainly in the Windham County, a little bit in sort of the New London County. And I believe there's even a little hint in sort of west of the state. But for somebody to make a claim, or if they have a concern possibly, their home has to have been built from 1983.
Candidly, that's where all of these claims lie. You know, we open a claim, we see that the house was built in 1996 or 2003 or 1988. It's falling into a predictable pattern. And as to the location of these claims, the sort of visual image that I like to use, and you're familiar, of course, with you have many listeners in the northeast corner of Connecticut, but the visual imagery I like to use is you get in a car at Hartford, Brian, and you drive up 84. When you hit exit 63, which is coming from Hartford as a right exit, that begins the location of this crisis. And by the time you've hit Union, Connecticut, exit 73, the crisis for Connecticut is ended. 98% of every claim we've got, you can drive your car off of 63 or off of 73, 15 miles in either direction, and that's the hub of the crisis.
You were given a lot of money, $100 million bonded by the state, and then there was also a healthy homes surcharge, which was added to some homeowners policies, which brings in about $10.6 million. And I understand that's for a 10-year period. So that seems like a lot of money, but as we've already said, about $154,000, you know, dollars a pop per foundation. So, you know, it gets eaten up very quickly. You know, what's the state of play with applications? Because, you know, this money doesn't last forever, does it?
It doesn't. And let's preface the answer on applications to what's the state of play with funding. So you're correct that under the statute, we are scheduled to get $100 million in funding from the Connecticut Bond Commission. We have been very fortunate in getting $80 million so far. On top of that, we got $10.6 million, you're right, from that first tranche, that first piece of the Healthy Homes surcharge. We got that in June of 20. We have nine more of those Healthy Homes surcharge tranches to go, and we estimate that the next and the subsequent pieces will be probably a little higher, in the range of $11.6 to $12 million. We have one more piece of the Connecticut bond funding coming in. That's $20 million. So, in June, July, in about the 6 weeks or so between the end of June, the end of July of 21, I expect to get, I think, as much as $32 million. My last piece of $20 million from the Connecticut Bond Commission, and I hope as much as $12 million from the Healthy Homes Surcharge Funds. After that last piece of bond commission funding, only funding I will have left is 8 more years of $11 to $12 million. And candidly, Brian, that's not enough. Is this crisis 35,000 homes, as has been reported? No. Is it 34? Is it 30? No. I have, as of today, we have an active process underway. I have 1,689 claimants. I don't want to minimize anything I'm saying. 1,689 people who are in financial distress, whose homeowners insurers have denied their claims, who have lost a significant amount of their net worth. Part of their retirement may, or all of their retirement may, be tied up in the value of their home. It is a serious, serious tragedy. But I don't have 35,000 homes. We estimate that we have between 4 and 6,000 eventual crumbling foundations in the northeast corner of Connecticut. And if I get beyond the Healthy Homes funds I'm getting, if I get between 100 and 150 million more beyond that, plus the 20 million I'm getting in July, what I've said to the governor and I've said to others is I can put this crisis to rest for 15 to 18 years.
Sounds like an audacious plan, but clearly backed up by, you know, the figures and the science that you're looking at.
No, we're the one thing we have is we are in possession of enormous amounts of data. We can tell you by zip code where these claims are. We can tell you by street where they are. We can tell you by average year of home built, average square footage. Nobody has more data than we do, and we put it to use each day in sort of projecting the future of this. I will tell you that Governor Lamont and his staff have been enormously helpful and very forthcoming in keeping us informed about the progress of our funding. They've been great to work with. But I will tell you that this is a significant human crisis, but it is not nearly the $1 to $2 billion crisis that was reported a couple of years ago.
There's so much more that we could discuss on this, but I suppose the important thing to ask you now is if there is anybody out there listening who thinks that they may have a property that could be suffering from crumbling foundation situation, what do they do?
They should become informed. Our best ally in this effort, our best ally in raising more funds, is an informed claimant, an informed homeowner. Go on our website, which quite simply is Connecticut Foundation Solutions Indemnity Company.org. But we're well enough known that if you just type in your Google browser or any browser, CFSIC, up we will come. Take a moment and go to the For Homeowners section of that website. There are specific subsections in that For Homeowners site that'll tell you where we are, how we look at a remediation of a claim, how you apply, what the points of evidence are that you need. And here's what's key for your listeners to know, Brian. The most important part of this is register your claim with us. Let us know where you are. Our only hope of raising more funds beyond the Healthy Homes surcharge funds that you and I just talked about in the last $20 million of bond revenue, our only hope is to convince the legislature that we are in complete understanding of this crisis and that there's a list of folks there right now on my website, or rather in our files. We have 480 what we call pending claimants. Those are claimants that I may never get to because I have insufficient cash. Those are taxpayers in the towns in question. I need to get to those people. Go up on the website, CIFSIC, register your claim, let us know who you are, and we will keep you continually informed.
Michael Maglera, Superintendent of the Connecticut Foundation Solutions Indemnity Company, thank you ever so much for giving us an update on the crumbling foundation crisis here in Connecticut. And of course, we're grateful to you and your staff and your organization for helping out those already with the money that you've been given. And as you said, let's hope that the legislator can find some more money for you as well to make sure that all of these people can stay in their homes safely.
Let's hope indeed. I think we can agree that if we can get you in your home for keeps, then all of us have succeeded. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you. Another side to this problem is research and finding out more about how and why this problem is occurring and what can be done about it. Recently, a team at UConn received a sizable grant from the National Institute of Standards and Technology to conduct further research into the crumbling foundation problem here in the state, and I spoke with Jim Mahoney, one member of the research team. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we're talking today about crumbling foundations, which is a big issue here in eastern Connecticut and northeastern Connecticut. You and the team from UConn got a nice sizable grant to look into this, to research this. Tell us a little bit more about what it is you're hoping to achieve with your research and what that ultimately means for people with crumbling foundation homes.
start out, the university itself provided us with some seed funding to develop a test to determine the amount of pyrotite that's in concrete and to be able to make it a reliable, repeatable test, which we have essentially done. We then were successful in getting some funding from the National Institutes of Standards and Technology to continue using that test, refining it, and then also building out towards developing a risk assessment framework so that we can look at houses and understand which ones are likely to have problems and which ones are not likely to have problems.
So just to be clear, just explain to us what this, I believe it's a mineral pyrotite, is it naturally occurring? Explain to us a little bit about it and why it's problematical.
Pyrotite is an iron oxide or an iron sulfide mineral rather. And in the presence of water and air, the iron likes to oxidize, essentially becoming rust. And it frees up the sulfide portion of it, which then cascades into several problems where it releases a little bit of sulfuric acid, which attacks the concrete, as well as forms secondary expansive minerals, which cause the concrete to actually push apart from the inside out, which ultimately causes the cracking and the foundation to become unstable.
And how quickly, you know, can this occur? Because I think, you know, when people hear about this and say, oh my gosh, I've got a crumbling foundation, I think a lot of people, you know, quite understandably think the whole thing's going to come down around their ears, you know, a matter of, you know, days or weeks. I mean, is this a fairly fast acting thing once it gets going, or are we talking over a period of months and years?
Depends on how you quantify quick, but it's a fairly slow acting problem. It develops over months and years. And so what happens is that the foundation just starts to get hairline cracks in it, mostly in a lot of which are in the horizontal direction rather than vertical. And as these cracks grow, they tend to push up on the foundation and they actually cause the house itself to become out of square and out of plumb. So doors and windows, in the worst case scenario, stop functioning and you start having issues with trying to be able to close doors and that kind of thing. So ultimately the foundations will fail, but it takes a while for that to get to that point.
And again, not trying to minimize this, but again, just trying to understand it for the listeners as well, is clearly you have to take action once this starts by way of obviously having the foundation completely replaced. Once obviously this does start, it doesn't stop, does it? I mean, you know, once you've got a crumbling foundation, it's just something that you can't ignore. It's not going to suddenly just stop, is it?
It's not likely to stop. It is possible that if all of the pyrotite is, I'll say, oxidized and there's nothing more to go, it is possible that the damage may kind of subside, or not subside, but won't get any worse. And so therefore you end up with, it is possible. That's one of the things we're trying to understand as part of our research, is how fast and how much pyrotite is necessary for the reaction to continue and for the damage to continuously get worse on a scale that moves relatively slowly.
And of course, it's important, as we said, to deal with it, because it's going to cause issues with the house. And ultimately, I mean, if you ever wanted to sell the house, that's going to be a major issue with coming to sell a house, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a very big issue, because even for houses that don't show any form of distress, one of the things that happens is that for homeowners buying a house, many of them are going to want core testing done, so that they want to see whether or not they have a risk or not for this problem. If they do core testing and it comes back containing pyrotite, nobody knows what the magic number is for which pyrotite is too much or it's going to be a minimal or non-existent problem. So it's a very big problem, particularly for the houses that are not showing the extreme amounts of damage, because how do you quantify whether or not the risk is there or not? Because if you have pyrotite, nobody knows how much is too much at this point.
You yourself had a situation with a property that had a crumbling foundation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was the owner of a house that had the issue. It kind of came up out unexpectedly. I was reading something on the internet. I decided to go down to the basement. I looked and I saw the horizontal cracking and the spiderweb cracking that was on the foundation walls. Happily, the cracks were not very large, but they were there. And there was that moment of sinking feeling in my heart where I'm like, okay, I'm now the proud owner of one of these things. So that was a really big punch in the gut. Ultimately, my wife and I ended up selling that house for a very low value because of the issue, because we didn't really feel like dealing with it. And so we moved on, probably reduced the value of the house by 2/3.
Point I suppose we want to make is that it can be dealt with, but obviously it is a costly thing to do because it's possibly a complete foundation removal and renewal process. I mean, and we're talking possibly a couple of $100,000 to do that.
The most widely recognized way to fix the problem and most guaranteed for to have success is to essentially remove the entire foundation. And there are several different processes out there, some of which where they come in and they actually jack your house up in the air, rip out the foundation from underneath, replace everything, lower the house back down onto it. That's one way. Another way that it is done is that it can be done in sections, and then the foundation, they cut out small sections of the foundation, replace that, and work their way around the entire foundation perimeter. It is very destructive. And if you have sidewalks, patios, swimming pools that are close to your house, anything, all of that is gone because they have to dig out 10 to 15 feet from the foundation in order to be able to work out underneath your house. And therefore, a lot of that is not covered by the reimbursement from the captive insurance company. The actual concrete work and reconnecting the utilities are, but any other amenities are gone.
So talk to us a little bit about the work that you and the team are doing by way of looking into the crumbling foundation situation. And ultimately, before we started this interview, we're saying you're not there yet, but it could get to a point where maybe you may be able to supply some testing possibly to people down the road. So just talk us through where you are at the moment with all of this.
Yeah, we are at the point where we are preparing to start to do 100 houses where we're going to do testing as part of the grant from the National Institutes of Science and Technology, where we're going to go into people's houses and we're going to actually drill the foundations. We're going to test for pyrotite, its presence, and if it is present, what concentrations it's there. That has obviously been slightly delayed because of the COVID issues. We're trying to work through all of that. It's another problem on top of a problem. So we're doing that. The idea is that we want to be able to build a risk assessment framework so that as it stands right now, it's pretty easy to pick the houses that need to be where the foundations need to be replaced, because when you can stick your hand through the foundation, that's obviously a problem that needs to be addressed. But as we go forward in time, there's going to be an issue where, okay, how do we determine which houses are at risk and which ones aren't, and which ones need to be replaced and which ones don't? And so that's really the framework that we're trying to build so that we can then basically rate the risk that each house has as to, is it a high, low, medium risk type of situation? Because it's very expensive to replace all these foundations, and I don't believe they all need to be replaced, but trying to determine which ones need to be and which ones don't, that's a whole nother question that needs to be answered.
You're still learning a lot about pyrotite and the whole situation. Apart from, you know, the framework that you've just been talking about, the risk assessment framework, do you hope that ultimately the research could lead to maybe almost some sort of ability for you to maybe neutralize it, you know, if it's a case of, you know, a house is maybe in the early stages of a crumbling foundation, like you said, doesn't have, you know, these gaps where you can put your hand in it, where, as you say, clearly it needs to be dealt with. But do you feel that there may come a point where you might be able to neutralize it and nip it in the bud early?
I'd like to be able to say that we certainly hope to be able to do that, but I can't say for certain that that will be able to be done, because obviously there are different options out there for trying to minimize the water and air penetration and possibly trying to prevent the pyrotite from oxidizing. One of the issues is getting it into the hardened concrete to prevent that from happening. So we're hoping that if we use our standardized test method and others begin to utilize it as well, we're going to start collecting a bunch of data that's going to be uniform across so that we're comparing apples to apples. So that then at that point, hopefully we can select the houses that are maybe in the low end of the categories of risk. And maybe those, there are some options to be able to even lower the risk further. I can't say that we could maybe ever 100% neutralize the problem, but maybe we might be able to come to a point where we can identify the houses that, okay, action now will save problems 20 years from now.
Is everyone's house potentially at risk from this, or is it a case of, because certainly we're seeing a hot spot of these things here in Eastern Connecticut, but is it a case that any house, obviously, that's got a concrete foundation, which is literally every house, I mean, are they all potentially at risk?
It depends on where the aggregate that was used comes from to make the concrete. In previous research that was done at UConn, there was a quarry that was identified as supplying aggregate that contained pyrotite. And so that particular aggregate is the one that seems to be the most problematic for degradation of the concrete.
So it's a case of, you know, we should be checking our houses anyway, shouldn't we, sort of thing. But I was just curious to understand, you know, the situation, because like I said, it does seem to have been certainly very prominent in the Eastern Connecticut and Northeastern section. If people want to have any questions answered or need any help, is UConn available to them to ask questions, or do they need to go elsewhere for that? Because it's always helpful to people to know that if they've got some questions that maybe they can tap into some expert advice. So are you able to tell us where they can get that expert advice?
We are able to answer some levels of questions. We are not a approved inspector for house foundations, so we are not allowed to do the inspections that are required as part of the application process for the captive insurance program. But if it's a technical question or something, we can certainly answer that. And an email address that people can reach out to us at is crumblingconcrete@ucon.edu. We also have a website up, which is crumblingconcrete.engr.ucon.edu. So for technical questions, things like that, we are happy to try to provide as much guidance and information as we can.
It's always good to know exactly, you know, where people can get what sort of information, and that's the most important thing at the end of the day. Jim Mahoney, been great talking to you. Thank you ever so much. And this is a story we will be continuing to follow. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Green Valley Tree LLC is proud to sponsor Connecticut East This Week. Contact Green Valley Tree LLC for all your tree removal and plant health care needs and more. Find us at greenvalleytreeworks.com or call 860-234-4041.
Time now for a look at some of the other stories making the headlines in the region recently. Rodney Butler, the chairman of the Mashantucket Pequot Tribal Nation and Foxwoods Casino, unveiled plans for a new multi-million dollar casino on the island of Puerto Rico recently. At a press event, Butler revealed what it would mean for the island and for its residents.
These investments in the opening of the casino are anticipated to generate an estimated economic impact of $22 million back to the island annually, creating a projected 360 new jobs in the region, 150 of those specifically at the casino.
The investment is part of a wider renovation to the island's iconic Fairmont El San Juan Hotel. The new casino will also carry the Foxwoods name. In the day this week, the City of New London's Fire Marshal's Office and New London Police Department have released new details of the fire that led to the death of Tony Shea, the 46-year-old millionaire and founder of the online shoe and clothing retailer Zappos, on November 18th last year. However, they have been unable to establish the precise circumstances that caused the fire that may have led to his death, officially ruling the cause of the fire as undetermined. And in next week's Connecticut East This Week, we talk with Professor Brendan Cunningham of the Economics and Finance Department of Eastern Connecticut State University about how COVID-19 has finally revealed how broken many systems are, not only in Connecticut, but the U.S. as a whole, from food insecurity to public health services and the disparities between white and black wealth. That's all from us for this edition. Do send us your questions and story ideas to the show via our website at connecticut-east.com or Facebook or Twitter at Connecticut East, where you can also listen to the show again on demand. And please like, follow and share on your social media platforms too. I'm Brian Scott Smith. Thank you for listening.